Hey guys, and welcome to episode 159 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Firstly, welcome back and thank you for listening. I appreciate it. And this week's episode is with Alex Calafi. Alex kindly agreed to share his OCD story with us, and he goes into loads of detail into his story and also, you know, what's helping him on his recovery path. So we'll get into that real quick, but I wanted to read a couple of the reviews, latest reviews from iTunes, just as a thanks to you guys. Lucas says, this podcast is gold for anyone suffering with OCD or those keen to help others. Amazing storytelling and guests for this tricky, sticky subject. My billboard would say, listen to the OCD stories on iTunes. Thank you for that. Next one is Emily. Emily says, Stuart gives so much helpful information and teaching, compassion to OCD sufferers, and additional content to helping those suffering with OCD. A regular listen at work or on the road, this is a fantastic resource for anyone suffering with OCD or living with or helping an OCD sufferer. Since being diagnosed with OCD, this podcast inspired me in my recovery and helped me in more ways than I can ever explain. Truly life-changing. That means a lot. Thank you, Emily. And then lastly, from someone called Professor Fatbone, they say, I really love this podcast. This helped me calm down in a time of much mental chaos. More coming? Yeah, so the answer to that, my friend, is every Sunday. So thank you all for listening and for those that have left reviews. And if this podcast has inspired you, touched you positively in some way, it would mean the world if you could leave a review wherever you listen to this. Thank you as always. And without further ado, here is Alex. On the podcast today, I have Alex Calafi. Alex has kindly agreed to share his OCD story with us. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
It's good to have you on, and you published your written story on the site a couple of weeks ago, which was a really good read, so it's good to have you here.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So should I just go over it again?
Yeah,
what,
please.
My OCD story?
Yeah, let's assume the people listening haven't read it, and we'll unpack it from there. So in as much detail as you want.
Sure. So my OCD story dates back to this past June. Before that, I had no psychiatric experience whatsoever. I was a mentally healthy young man, girlfriend, job, going to the gym, hobbies, all that stuff. And none of that stuff's necessarily changed, but I had no experience in the mental health world. Yeah. It all changed one fateful Wednesday at the end of June when I had just gotten back from the gym and I was sitting down in front of my computer to eat dinner and watch an episode of the Joe Rogan Experience. He was talking to his guest about the new God of War, and my dinner that night was a veggie burger that I had not eaten before. I took the first bite and my throat immediately got sore. I have pollen allergies, so I thought that the fresh ingredients may have triggered said allergies that up until this point have caused no serious problems in my life. So I kept eating it, thinking no big deal, took another bite. My throat felt progressively worse, and then my eyes started to feel puffy. This kind of thing had happened once before to some extent, and Benadryl made me feel better. So I figured that was the solution here too. Ran to the nearby supermarket a few minutes away from me in Boston, and I went to the medicine section. Then I started sneezing uncontrollably. Eyes and throat started to feel worse, so I picked up children's Benadryl, the first thing I could find, paid some amount of money for it, went outside, took it immediately, and then I ran home 5 minutes away, wheezing through my mouth as my nostrils clogged on the way home. I took to Google, looked up anaphylaxis, wasn't sure if I met the criteria. And then I looked in the mirror, my eyes were puffed, blue, and barely open. I really need to go to the emergency room. Now, thankfully, the emergency room is a 10-minute run away from my house. I'm an active guy, so my solution when I can is running to places. And I sprinted to the ER 10 minutes away because I had this thought that, okay, epinephrine, EpiPen, that's adrenaline. Running would cause adrenaline to go up, which would have EpiPen-like effects and save me from anaphylaxis. That is not how it works, it turns out. And in fact, if you're ever having an allergic reaction or think you are, the worst thing to do is to exercise. That's something I learned. It's the very worst thing you can do. It'll exacerbate your symptoms. I got to the emergency room, and they basically gave me an IV with steroids and Benadryl, and I got home around 4 a.m. that night. I asked them if I was at risk of dying. They said, probably not. You just had an acute allergic reaction, but it may have gotten hard to breathe if you didn't go to the ER. So there's one quick lesson. That's when I started to have serious anxiety issues. It was right then and there. I had had some anxiety in the past, but not enough that I ever needed to take a pill or even use coping strategies. Or I was never that anxious of a kid, but I was on edge for days after that, wondering whether another allergic reaction was right around the corner. I'm a big eater, but it's almost as if everything I had learned about food had gone out the window, and I got scared every time I ate something that I had had before, like rice or even Gatorade, like just because I read somewhere on Google that Gatorade has some issues with some people who have certain allergies. One might call this my first obsession, looking back, was whether I would get an allergic reaction again. My throat got a little dry every time I ate something. So I was like, oh, is it coming back? Is it coming back? But I was relatively on edge for the next week. And it sort of came to a head on Sunday when I had just finished recording some podcasts with my friends. My stomach suddenly started to feel weird. When we were eating dinner, I thought I was having an allergic reaction to the ice cream I was eating, even though I wasn't. And I went home feeling extremely nauseated. That night I couldn't sleep, and my nauseation is, if that's a word, the next night got so bad that I went back to the ER because I had this intense pain in my chest and my stomach. I thought I had GERD, and they gave me omeprazole, sucralfate, which is sort of an acid reflux sort of drug. And then they told me to see my primary care doctor, and that's when it all got bad. I started having panic attack after panic attack. I started the allergy. Me thinking I was allergic to every food kept going. I thought I was going to die in my sleep, even though I had no reason to think that. But I got obsessed with the idea that I was going to die in my sleep. I also had an intense hypochondria. One day I had stomach pains, thought I had appendicitis. The next, stomach cancer, then colon cancer, then all sorts of stuff. And I told myself that each disease was going to be the one that got me. I realized, thankfully, that my mental health was in an unsustainable state. So I actually got very proactive with my mental health care the first week, basically, that this had happened. I started seeing a therapist. I started meditating to the point where it got religious, not in a literal sense, but I was meditating a lot. I started studying CBT. I read books by even like the classics like Claire Weeks, and I started exercising even more. I tried coping mechanisms. The more I tried, the worse it got. And I found out later that it was mostly anxiety that caused all my stomach pains in the first place. And I felt a little better and the hypochondria went away, but the anxiety marched on. In addition to panic attacks and that fear of sleep, I started to get weirder issues, like songs would get stuck in my head for days at a time, in addition to a fear I'd never let go of those songs. And that was kind of one of the first symbols, the first signs of OCD that I would get, although I think the fear of eating was relatively OCD-esque from the very beginning. So before any of this happened, the only OCD-like trait I had was that I had a certain distrust in my stove. Like when I would go to bed at night, I would check like 4 or 5 times whether the stove was off. But I live with 4 roommates, so I didn't necessarily think much of it. But now looking back, I'm like, oh, maybe I did have some of the predisposed mannerisms for OCD. Everything continued until I think it was July, when randomly one moment I had a thought, as every new obsession begins, and I wondered if I was going to forget to breathe. As a result, I got obsessed with my own breathing, in, out, all day, every day. I thought it was going to be the death of me. I got super depressed, And I went to Google, who told me that it was something called sensory motor OCD. And I've read some stories on your site, Stuart, and it seems like other people have dealt with this breathing OCD too.
Yeah.
And one of the things I learned is that you really don't want to Google stuff, especially if you're a hypochondriac like me, or if you're in a very impressionable anxiety state like I was and still am oftentimes. Because when you Google an OCD and you find the message board, you don't find the people who had that OCD and then successfully treated it. Hmm. You find the people who are suffering and are having a really tough time. Thank you. Yeah. Have you ever noticed something similar, that when you Google mental health stuff, it's often not the success stories that you find?
It is. Yeah. I've had that. Many emails from people saying, like, why are there no, in the case of relationship OCD, why are there no stories about how people have come through it and they're still married and still together? And I'm just like, well, those people are just living their lives. They haven't paused to think, maybe I should document this. And I'm not saying that it's their responsibility, but naturally people don't always think, oh, can I kind of give back or kind of look back and help people who are still not quite there yet? So yeah, absolutely. And I think that goes for most mental health stuff. You get the odd advocate, obviously, who kind of do stuff to kind of show that, you know, where they've come to. But the majority of people don't share the kind of recovery story.
Yeah. Because there's no need to. I mean, yeah. I feel some sort of obligation that as I'm making progress in my mental health treatment to take steps to help people, which is the reason why I reached out to you. And it's also why I reached out to the fine folks at the International OCD Foundation to start doing some volunteer work with them.
Nice.
Yeah. So I found out about this thing called sensory motor OCD, a.k.a. hyper awareness OCD, a.k.a. somatic OCD. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of names for it. And there's a lot of, like with all OCD, there's a lot of different manifestations. Like, there's breathing obsessions, there's blinking obsessions, there's I got the feeling of the inside of my mouth I started obsessing over. It's all this stuff that normally you don't necessarily notice or have a judgment of, but then you start judging fear attached to it. So then you start hyper-focusing on it, and it's a hellish thing. And it's one of the rare OCDs I found out, too. But the people who I saw on these message boards, going back to that point, was like, they were having thoughts to the extent of suicidal ideation. So one of the things that I recommend to people who are going through mental health issues, the people who got better or are getting better aren't the people you're going to find on Google. So I recommend working with an experienced OCD coach, if that's something you have access to, who knows more about this kind of stuff. I also have – there's a workbook that I actually just got that I've been meaning to look through, called The Mindfulness Workbook for OCD. Have you heard of this one by John Hirschfeld?
Yeah. He's been on the podcast a few times. It's a good guy.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. So he wrote a pretty cool book that's about mindfulness and OCD, and that actually has a chapter on the sensory motor hyper-awareness OCD. So if anyone's dealing with a similar thing, that's a book I'd recommend people go to get some exposure tips and whatnot. But my solution was to practice meditation until the breathing OCD no longer bothered me, and that the thought demons would hold no power over me. Only as I tried to meditate and practice more coping mechanisms, everything just kept getting worse. Because I think what had happened, as we later find out through ACT, struggling, no matter how what the intent is the best way to make your OCD grow in a lot of cases. I can't – OCD is so different for so many people, so I don't want to speak for everyone. But at least in my case, the more I struggled against the OCD that I had, the worse it got for me, even though they were coping mechanisms, even though they were meditations. It was kind of like a control strategy, I think the term is. And then I just got random intrusive thoughts and images. And then I started to get these other obsessions, which were sort of on the sensory motor side. Started to get obsessions with patterns, like the colors red and white, for no clear reason. it's almost like I would get aware of something and I would get scared that I would never let go of those awarenesses and that I'd be trapped in the state of OCD forever and ever. It's that kind of uncertainty, as we would say. The one that broke the camel's back was one in early September when I started to question whether anything outside my peripheral vision was real. And I started to question whether things existed or were just hallucinations, whether life was real, all these scary existential thoughts. And Google, who I reached out to, my trusty friend, suggested that I could have what's called a delusion disorder, which is one of the worst things in the mental health world. Even though, as I would later learn, existential crises extremely common in the OCD world, delusional thoughts, which is very different from delusions, are also something that people with OCD and any kind of anxiety order disorder deal with. Do you have any experience with the delusional thought side of things?
Not personally. But yeah, existential themed OCD is fairly common, where people will just kind of take natural, normal philosophical questions to like the extreme and constantly worry and obsess about them to the point they're getting heavily anxious over grand questions like what is the meaning of life? There's a million and one questions. But I've heard it a lot. It's not something, I mean, those questions fascinate me, but OCD's never latched on to them.
Okay, cool. But when I got to that point, when I started questioning whether things were real or whether I was the only one who was alive or any of those questions that are super disturbing, especially to the mind of someone with OCD who can't let go of thoughts immediately. So that was kind of the moment where I was like, things are not good. I need to go to the hospital and get myself checked out at the ER. So I went to the ER with my cousin, and after a day of waiting in the emergency room, they thought I had a mood disorder, like bipolar. Yeah. And they suggested that I go inpatient. A common theme that I've read about OCD is that it is very commonly misdiagnosed because there's so many different manifestations it can take.
Yeah, it's really who you go to as well. I mean, if you go to a CBT therapist who's done a lot of training, they in theory should have come across OCD and know to some degree that it can come in many forms. There's some hospitals and stuff that don't have a grasp on it, but most psychologically trained people now hopefully at least do have some grasp on it.
Right. And because they thought I had bipolar, I made the decision to go inpatient at a psychiatric facility for 10 days because if it's bipolar, I had never taken a psychiatric medicine before.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't have the time to wait several months with a psychiatrist to find out what's going to happen with me or to find the right med balance. So I made the decision to going from no psychiatric experience nor taking of medication to 3 months later spending 9 days in a psychiatric hospital, which goes from that's the real extremes. At the hospital, the nurse practitioner thought it was the prednisone I had been given for my allergic reaction that made me crazy, which it had been known to do to some people, not bipolar. They gave me Zyprexa and Luvox, two common drugs for intrusive thoughts, and let me go ultimately because I wasn't suicidal and didn't really belong there, even though I didn't feel better. So after that, I went to a partial hospitalization program, which, if you don't know, is sort of this thing where you go to a mental hospital, you go from like 9 to 5, or in my case, it was like 10 to 3. You go to like 3 to 5 groups a day, and then you get to see a nurse practitioner and a therapist once or twice a week. So I went to 5 groups a day, met with a counselor once a week, and contrary to the initial bipolar and prednisone-based diagnoses, she thought I had OCD, which is what I originally thought I had before the obsessions got extra scary and existential. She also introduced me to The Happiness Trap by Russ Harris, who was on a recent episode of your podcast.
True.
And that's an amazing, amazing book, as well as some initial ACT concepts. But because the Luvox hadn't fully kicked in yet and I didn't grasp the ACT skills, my obsessions kept getting worse. And it got to the point where I thought I'd have to go back to the hospital. I developed a harm obsession. And I thought I would lose control, sleepwalk in my sleep, and harm myself, despite having no history or desire to do such things. Also very common in the OCD world.
Yeah.
It was not good. The first psychiatrist I saw out of my after I finished my partial hospitalization program, I met this psychiatrist who was my first outpatient psychiatrist, who told me that I was I'm not going to curse, but F-worded, effed.
Yeah.
He told me that I was effed, which is a very scary thing to be told as someone with an anxiety disorder who is very impressionable in that state and was at a low point. I was told that I was effed, which made basically everyone in my family angry, because he's one of these guys who's like, F feelings, like he's like I think he actually wrote a book called F feelings, and it messed with my head for a while.
Yeah, but I imagine.
Yeah,
no. So well, just to interrupt there, like no one with any mental health difficulties is effed. You know what I mean? There's always solutions. So yeah, for him to say that is says a lot about him, or at least his state of mind at that time.
Yeah, it was a scary thing to be told, because I was at a relatively low point. I did not see him a second time, you'll be happy to know. I found a nurse practitioner who has been helpful to me. And then the other thing I did was I went on the International OCD Foundation website. I tracked down a therapist who specializes in OCD treatment, and that was a game changer. Just talking to a therapist who isn't just the tell me about your past, what were your parents like type therapist. Who my previous guy was a lot like that, but he wasn't necessarily tackling the OCD issues. He was just more like, practice self-compassion, which I'm sure is a great thing for a lot of people and even people with OCD, but he wasn't necessarily the best match for me because he wasn't hitting the OCD head on. And having an OCD therapist was such a game changer, epiphany moment for me, because it was someone who didn't care about what my parents did for work or what my relationship to my siblings is. He's the kind of dude who he actually worked at McLean's OCD hospital, which is supposed to be like the best in the world or one of the best in the world.
Yeah.
And, he was just like, you got OCD. Here's what we're going to do about it. Let's practice exposures. Put a knife next to your bedside for the harm obsession. Do some scripting. Try this, this, and that. And as we were doing that, I was starting to pick up the concepts of ACT a little more. And then my medication was starting to kick in. The Luvox and Zyprexa had some time to kick in. And I got to the point where over the last month and a half, I've been like recovering, which is cool. It's still in the early part of my journey.
Yeah.
I was telling you before the show that like the OCD has flared up again recently. But I've been sort of controlling it better. I went to the doctor or the nurse practitioner I'd been seeing, and he said he thought that like my new OCD thoughts were the result of me going down on the Zyprexa. So I'm still doing med balance and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I'd say that like I have a very good tool set to work from. And I've gotten to the point where I've been recovering enough that I wanted to reach out and make things happen to help other people with OCD. And my original idea was, since I have my own podcast, I was going to like record an hour of me talking about the experience. But since you had a podcast, and since you have one of the more well-known OCD sort of media websites, and my OCD therapist actually recommended I go on to this show to tell my story. And then lastly, I decided to start volunteering at the International OCD Foundation, which is in Boston, which is where I am. And I'm going to start doing that in the next couple weeks, I think. So I've been recovering, Stuart. I've been recovering.
Yeah, well, thank you for going into so much detail. I appreciate it. And like we were saying before the podcast started, recovery can be a windy road and sometimes an ongoing one. And I think, the fact that you've kind of had a slight lapse after, a month of doing well, it's kind of natural, it happens to a lot of people. And it's about keep doing what you have been doing to get better. And then you'll start to get better again. It's almost not to get disheartened by those lapses. So anyone else who wants to kind of volunteer for the ISDF, for example, how did you go about, contacting them and asking them?
So at first I sent an email, but that didn't necessarily work because I'm guessing they get all sorts of emails. So I ended up just calling them on their website, and I was just like, hey, can I volunteer? And then they said, yeah. So I came into the office, wonderful group of people there who really care about their mission, I think, at least from seeing them work. But if you live, I think it might be limited to the United States, but maybe not. If you're interested in being an OCD advocate, or OCDvocate, I think is their term for it. There's a section on the International OCD website where you can basically be a part of their mailing list for, hey, we need volunteers here, here, here. And you can just sort of wait in the wings. And then they'll even send a cool bracelet, which says like OCDvocate on it. So if you're interested in being a volunteer for the OCD Foundation, I would recommend looking into the OCDvocate portion of their website, because I think that's a way you can get involved.
Yeah, really good point. Okay, cool. So you mentioned an epiphany a minute ago, which was getting an OCD therapist or specialist. Was there any other sort of epiphanies in the way you saw recovery or OCD or anything like that?
Sure. There were a few that helped me. The happiness trap and ACT is awesome because it teaches you how to stop struggling against your OCD and mental health sort of troubles. Because the thing that grows anxiety, especially as my understanding goes, is to struggle against it, to struggle against the reality of the situation that, hey, you're dealing with some stuff right now. And to accept your situation and allow your mind to do what it's going to do. And while that's happening, move your efforts towards taking valued actions. And that allows you to create a life of meaning. I also think stoicism is a great thing. Yeah. Are you familiar with stoicism?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
It's some people may know the book The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday and Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. Those are the two most popular books on the subject, I think. And those kind of helped me to go, hey, we should accept the moment as it presents itself and find meaning in what life has dealt us. Use your challenges to become greater human beings. The obstacle is indeed the way. Yeah. I think exercise is good. One thing that I kind of would recommend is specifically weight training. If you're going to do an exercise to deal with your mental health, running can be great too, especially if you're a runner by nature. But if you're running, I've found that on some of the runs I go on, my mind just races even more because it's just me alone with my thoughts for a while. And I think weight training is more engaging, but if running works for you, all the power to you. Meditation is good. It allows you to see your thoughts for thoughts a little bit. And I would recommend the 10% Happier books by Dan Harris. One of them's an autobiography. The other is a guide for various meditations to try. An OCD therapist is a big one. Not Googling any symptoms. And if you have OCD, you might want to consider taking medication. I'm not going to tell anyone that they have to. You certainly don't. If you find ways without medication, perfect. Amazing, amazing, amazing. You do you. But as someone who also comes from the school of thought that you really shouldn't take unnecessary medication, it's kind of been a game changer for me. Because have you read the book Brainlock before?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, so BrainLock goes into it's sort of different from ACT, the actual techniques. But what I like about BrainLock is how it goes into the way OCD works, how it's basically your brain overheating, and medication has helped that for me. It's helped me slow my thoughts down and take things one at a time. When I've gotten into the delusional thoughts territory of questioning whether things are real, whether I'm alone in the world, all those kinds of existential thoughts, medication has sort of pulled me back to the present. And I recommend that if you want to find a prescriber, you should do so. Nurse practitioners have worked for me, although there's obviously tons of good psychiatrists in the world. But there's tons of not great ones too, as I learned. So it's important to, I think it's important to stick it out until you find the right prescriber for you if you decide that's a road you want to go down. The last stuff, just if you have hyper-awareness or sensory motor OCD, I learned that you don't notice you're breathing and blinking normally, and that place of awareness is possible to go back to once you let go of the struggle. Mm. So ACT is cool for that. And it's also awareness OCDs are fear and anxiety related. Once the fear is no longer there, the OCD has a hard time surviving. It's not a problem with breathing or blinking or whatever else. It's a fear judgment that has you looking at neutral things as something worth being afraid of, which is the story of OCD's life, I'd say. And exposure is good for the sensory motor OCD too.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, really good points there. The resistance piece is massive. You know, the old, is it adage, what we resist persists.
Yes.
I.e., in the case of OCD, what we push away is the thoughts, and that just means we're likely to get more of them. And when we can start to allow them to be there without judgment, as just thoughts, as clouds in the sky, so to speak, eventually we don't even notice them, or they go of their own accord. It's a mm-hmm. tough lesson, but I think it's an important one. The other thing you mentioned, yeah, stoicism. CBT was originally inspired by stoicism.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so Albert Ellis, who created REBT, which is a different form of therapy, which inspired CBT. So Albert Ellis, he basically used stoicism massively. And then Beck, who created CBT, or cognitive therapy, he was influenced by the Stoics as well. So it's real fascinating link between the two. And I had a guy called Donald Robertson on the podcast ages ago, and he wrote a book about looking at the history of CBT and its link to Stoicism.
Oh, nice.
So Stoicism is a fascinating philosophy, and I think one that won't trigger too many people because it's not so like grandiose, so these big questions. It's more, how can I live the best kind of life now, which is effectively what CBT does.
Yeah, yeah. And those two books, The Obstacle is the Way and Marcus Aurelius Meditations, are fine starting points, I'd say.
Absolutely, yeah, good books. And I think you can get Meditations for free on Amazon, or you used to be able to. Don't quote me on that. Okay, cool. Now, thank you for that. And what would you say the biggest roadblock was for you, and how did you overcome it?
The biggest roadblock for me was realizing that I couldn't do it on my own. I'm kind of a stubborn guy, which helps me in a lot of facets of life, but also it kind of hurts. And I wouldn't say I waited too long to ask for help, but I feel like if I asked for help sooner, maybe I would have avoided some of the later struggling that I went through. Because for months and months, my solution was to just use meditation as a control strategy instead of just as in something to improve a skill over a long period of time. And just I was using these coping mechanisms, and I was panicking a lot. And although I opened up to people about my anxiety relatively early and I did get a therapist, I kind of wish I asked for more help when it got bad, because it got really bad. Like I know what it's like now to have OCD get to a state that's not livable, which is not me being dark. It's just me saying that, like, it's a tough thing to deal with.
Yeah.
And asking for help when I really needed it, when it got really bad, was the game changer for me. When I started questioning reality, and then I was just like, hey, my mental health is not all right now. And I reached out to people. I think that's when my game changer happened. So as one of the things I write in the written version of my story, if you need help, ask for it. You are worth it. The world needs you.
Absolutely. Yeah, great words. And that actually kind of leads me on to the next question. So I'll ask it anyway, in case there's anything else you want to add, which is just words of hope for people with OCD.
Yeah. For one, I believe in you. I think we all have the strength in us to recover. I love the thing that says on the top of your Twitter, which is recovery is possible. And that's kind of a mantra I've been going with. So I guess I'm retreading a little bit sort of from the written story, but I guess to quote myself a little bit there, know that you're not alone. If you're someone like me whose OCD overcame them like a tsunami in a matter of months, you are not alone. If you're someone who feels like you're at life's darkest moment after trying every coping mechanism you could find, you are not alone. If you're someone with a rare form of OCD like me who feels like they're not going to get better, know that you're not alone and that it is possible to get better. The world needs you.
Yeah. Good. Great words. Yeah, I love it. Okay. So similar question, which is, you know, let's say someone comes to you and they're just starting their recovery journey. Is there any kind of advice you'd give them to kind of help them on that path?
I would give them a copy of The Obstacle is the Way immediately. Have you read that book?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the first thing I would do is like, hey, life, God, Mother Nature, whatever have you, has decided to give you this challenge. And it is up to you to determine what you do with that challenge. I would also give them a copy of The Happiness Trap. I think I've read both the illustrated version and the written version. The written version has more detail, but the illustrated version is an easier way to absorb some of those lessons. So I would do that. I would also recommend meditation. And once you know it's OCD, look into an OCD therapist. I recommend the IOCDF website as a very good first resource. So those would be the first things. The obstacle is the way, the happiness trap, meditation, and looking into an OCD therapist. And I think those would be good. And if it continues to get worse, then I would recommend looking into medication as a potential option if that's something you're open to.
And meditation, is that something, or what, sorry, I'm mumbling words. Do you use an app for that at all?
I've used Headspace for it. Headspace is an app that is done, it's from the UK, I think. And that has a lot of good meditation lessons, and it allows you to build up your practice slowly but surely. It teaches both novice and more challenging meditation concepts. And the first 10 days of it are free, I think. And then you can pay for the whole sort of plan.
Yeah, good point. There's loads of good meditation apps now. I started with Headspace, doing those 10 free ones. I think I then ended up paying for it, and I used it for like a year or 2 years, and it really helped teach me the principles of meditation. But then I switched over to the Calm app. So if those that don't want to then pay for Headspace, they can switch to Calm, and Calm have nice kind of natural water sounds and stuff in the background, and they give you free timed meditations. So it's unguided at this point, so you'd then need to use what you'd learned from Headspace to kind of use it. Or you can, they always do deals on subscriptions. It's worth it. Okay, cool. So let's say you could pick up the phone and call your 20-year-old self. What would you tell him?
If I could call myself from 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or six, if you want.
Or okay. I would say, hey, you are about to have the best and worst time of your life. Best time of my life because I met my wonderful girlfriend and I got myself into shape and I sort of got some new hobbies that gelled with me a lot. And that stuff's going to be great. But it's also going to be really tough because you're going to have to deal with this OCD thing. Yeah. And keep going. Just keep going. I wish I had something more. I'd probably give myself some of these tips like meditate when you have the chance and you're not dealing with a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
I'd probably have meditated sooner. Maybe I would have exercised even sooner. But I'd probably just say, hey, it's going to be tough. Stick with it and meditate.
Yeah, no, good. Good advice. Okay, so somewhat similar. You've got a billboard in Boston. What do you want written on that billboard for everyone to see?
I'd put the happiness trap on that billboard. I'd put an ad for the happiness trap on it because ACT is just such a game changer. And I've read from some of the stories I've read on your website, it seems like it's not just me who was really helped with ACT, but that seems like I'm pretty sure that's what they use at the McLean OCDI. And I think it's what a lot of people use. And I think the happiness trap is so good.
Yeah, it's a great book. Yeah, you're right. As far as I'm aware, McLean, they bring in ACT with ERP. And a lot of OCD therapists, especially in America as well, are merging the two, using ACT to support exposures. And yeah, it's an interesting time. Yeah, that book's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Is there anything else you want to share that I haven't asked you that you wish you could have said?
No. All I'll say is, hey, if you got this OCD thing or you think you got this OCD thing, it's going to be tough, but I believe in you.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate your time, Alex.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
I wish you well on your journey.
So there you have it. I really appreciate you listening to Alex's story. And thank you, as always, for listening to the podcast. Quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It's not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.